Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And it's a great honor to have you on the show tonight. Welcome, Deepak.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Time now for Eyes Wide Open with Janessa and SJ. Let's bring Janessa on to reintroduce herself, the show, and what's up for today.
Hello and welcome to Eyes Wide Open. We are multifaceted beings living a multidimensional existence, and we hold the power of perception, and this power alone paints our reality. Perception influences the things we see and the things we don't see. Together, we'll explore the mystical and the magic of the material, the metaphysical and the physical, the supernatural and the concrete, the seen and the unseen. Hi, I'm your host, Janessa Finley Ford. I'm an empowerment coach. And after experiencing the most stressful thing in my life, I have been able to liberate my spirit, dive into some topics I never thought I would challenge, test, or even shift my beliefs upon. Because I thought my beliefs had already been built upon a really strong foundation. So to kick us off here on this Wednesday, I will indulge you in what I hope will be a very funny story for you. So if you've been listening for a while, you guys know I'm a huge animal lover. Grew up on a farm, lots of animals, always been a huge fan, especially of dogs. More animals than just dogs, but when it came to choosing a pet to adopt and make a family member, I chose a boxer. For those of you that might not be familiar, boxers are pretty high energy dogs, fairly large, very muscular, part of the what we call bully breeds, although they're not typically too big of bullies, honestly, and mostly they just love being lap dogs. So the first boxer I adopted, his name was Ike, and he was a rescue. I've always adopted rescues. He had horrible separation anxiety. The poor dude definitely had a bad, sketchy background before he came to live with me. And he absolutely loved, like, going for rides, going anywhere, going for walks, for runs, super, like I said, high-level energy animal. Ike was actually a white boxer, brown eyes, big, big square head, bless his heart. So I was in the middle of a move. I had chosen to move a little bit closer to home. There were some family health issues going on, and I took a transfer with a job, which led pretty quickly to a promotion, and conveniently, my brother lived in the same place. So I purchased the house and needed to rip the carpet out, decided to do some painting and carpet before I moved in, and had the luxury of being able to stay with my brother in the meantime. And for the first several weeks of this move, or transition, Ike stayed with some friends. So we were not together. So it was a Saturday, and my brother was helping me rip the carpet out of this new home, which I didn't really have acclimation to that space being his home. And there is just some high tension within the stress of the whole situation. Moving can be stressful. Health issues can be stressful, and animals are so sensitive to that. So as we dive into this project, we realize that we don't have everything that we need, and so we head off to the local home improvement store. And as I have done so many times in my life, Ike's in the back seat of my car, and I leave the sunroof open to go in. It was a nice day. It was early spring, so beautiful weather, beautiful temperature. Ike's going to chill in the car like he always does, I think, in my head. And I go in the store. Probably many of you can see where this story may be going. But I go to the paint department to get my colors of paint mixed while my brother looks for some gloves and some other things that we needed so that we didn't tear our hands apart ripping out carpet. And there was some random speaker on the loudspeaker in the store, but of course I wasn't paying it any mind. I was, as I said, a little bit flustered and stressed out, really ready to be settled. Transitions are easier for me today than what they have been in the past, but change, it would take me some time to acclimate to change as well. So my phone is ringing, and it's my brother, and I'm like, well, this is weird. And I answer the phone, and he's like, hey, did you just hear that announcement? And I was like, no, what announcement? And he's like, your dog's in the store. And I am like, he's totally kidding. He's messing with me. Like, we're just trying to lighten the mood, whatever. And I'm like, no, he's not. And he's like, no, I promise you, the announcement just said, will the owner of a white, gives the description of the car and the plate, come to the front of the store. Your dog is in the store. And I'm like, shut up. Shut up, you're kidding. And he's like, I'm really not kidding. The paint department's all the way in the back of the store. And this isn't like a mom and pop shop either. Like, it's one of the big chain home improvement stores. You know, it feels like it's an eternity to walk from one end of the store to the other when your dog is sniffing your trail. Like, he's coming for me. He's going to find me. Like, I know you're in here somewhere. And we can't be apart right now. So I'm just going to go ahead and bridge that gap on my own. And I get to the front of the store, and some people must have let him outside. I don't know if he trusted them. I'm not sure, but he's like right in front of the store, no longer in the store. And they're like, yeah, we just watched him crawl out of your sunroof and walk down your car and just trot right in into the store, sniffing the ground. Like, seriously, he's coming for you. So that is the one and only time I've ever been paged to the front of the store for an animal, my animal, following me in to the store. And just so you know how atypical a behavior this is, like, so frequently Ike would run to the store with me, grocery store, whatever. I'd leave the window, the whole back window rolled down for him, and he could easily jump in and out of the car, like Dukes of Hazzard style, if he wanted to, but never did he. However, on that day, he's like, woman, I know you need some moral support, and I'm coming to give it to you. We cannot be separated right now. So I love my furry friends. They are amazing. And, you know, when you're talking about things that can be seen and unseen, there is truly a sixth sense to animals. And if you know, you know. If you have them in your life, you for sure know. But there's something very special about the connection between human and animal. So today we are going to dive into another system. That's what we've been talking about here in my series in recent past. We've been talking about the different systems in the world, how they came to be, the history and background of them, probably history details that maybe you haven't heard before. Hopefully it's stretching you. It's making you think about things from a different angle. We've talked about centralization of power and the effects that that has upon controlling the people. We've talked about the power pyramid and how we, the people, are at the bottom, but it is not the government that is at the top. We have talked about health, water, food, shelter, lots of good things. So if this is your first time jumping in here, definitely check out those past episodes, as they all really build upon one another. They're so interconnected, and they truly drive one another. And so if you just get one piece of the puzzle, you're not going to be able to see the whole picture. So I invite you to tune in to those past episodes as well that we've had, and jump on over to our Facebook page, Stronger Together, Fall in Love with You, to join the conversation that we've been having about all of these topics as well. So today I'm just going to own that the system that we're talking about, like, I'm so excited to be here, and I am definitely apprehensive and nervous. We are going to dive into the political system, and never did I ever, if we ever played that game, have you ever, never would I ever think I would be talking about our political system, ever. But when spirit gives you a nudge, you go on down the road. So we're going to traverse this road together. However, I'll also share with you, I have no experience talking about this topic of all of the things that I have talked about. And this might be a head scratcher for some, for someone who's worked in the government, worked in, especially with drug court, I spoke to stakeholders and to the public, and I did a lot of work around advocating for these rehabilitative programs, that you would think that it would be really interwoven into politics. And I suppose there's the potential for that. However, I will also share and own that I am an incredibly apolitical person, and I'm not here to tell you that that's how you should be. If this is your first time listening to me, I'll just make that disclaimer. If you've been following along, you already know. Like, we are here to examine things from a different angle, to test our beliefs, and to critically think about things so that you can discern and know why you believe what you believe and why it's your truth. And for me, I have never felt very aligned with politics, even though there could be that aspect interwoven into my career. And I truly believe that politics are one of the most divisive things just in bringing up the topic. Like, are you Democrat or Republican here in the U.S.? Those are the two main parties. And simply that question, you can feel if someone's not aligned with you, like, energetically, because there's so many stereotypes, even though there's so many places along the spectrum that you can hold your beliefs. Like, are you really, really liberal? Are you really, really conservative Republican? Like, there's so many ways to view both sides of the coin. And a lot of times, also with some of the more recent conversations I've had, people have registered with one party or the other, not because they truly feel that aligns with their points of view, because that's the only way they feel like their vote stands a chance. So I am a non-voter. I'm not here for anyone to try to sway me to think otherwise, but we'll talk a bit about that here today. And even when I was in college, when I was in government class, my government professor, who was my freshman year of college, I will never forget this, like, he would lean on me hard to go vote, to change my views, to invest in the system. This is how you express your voice. This is how you have options. I'll hold the little cliffhanger here for just a little bit as to why I disagree. But there were some things about the system, even at that time, at this very young age, that I questioned. Like, does my vote really truly matter? Does your vote really truly matter? Do politicians vote in alignment with the people the way that they say the Electoral College was designed to support popular vote? Or is maybe the vote that has the most monetary backing with the most influence of lobbying actually getting the check in the box on the voting ballot? And so these were curiosities that I had from a very young age. And maybe because I've held that belief, then I see that playing out in the world around me. I mean, that is truly how that works, right? But last year, a big reason why I'm doing this series is because of the experience that my now husband and I had last year going through this investigation and having a lot of my views tested. Like, the things that I thought I always knew about the justice system and the government and the world I lived in, it crumbled. And so then I decided, well, really, to do myself justice, I should test all of the things. I should look into as many things as I possibly can. And if you've read my blog where I share like the really down in the weeds version of the story, which you can find on my website, www.fiercelyradiantsoul.com. And if you go back to The Captives Will Be Set Free on the blog, it's like 5 pages back or so at this point. The story starts there. You can read it all. Even in writing the blog, there you can read the tone where there's points where the only way I could make sense of what I was seeing happen in reality in front of me was that there were some political influences and perhaps bias, although I'm not sure bias is the best word. What has come to be talked about and known and investigated as the weaponization of our investigating bodies here in the U.S. And I wavered. I wavered in whether being apolitical was really the way to go. And I, for some time, deeply debated and contemplated whether or not changing my stance and voting at midterms 2022 would be the most empowered thing. As I come here today saying I've always been political, so maybe that's, or sorry, apolitical, so maybe that's what I see showing up in the world, it's not because I've walked that path with blinders on. And in testing the things that I believe, it brought me back to my truth, actually, when I was on the very verge of getting into our political, participating within the political system. So I had an experience very recently where I met someone I'd never met before at a graduation party, and as we were chatting, I divulged my current situation, and they shared some of the hards in life. And we briefly, you know, mentioned politics, and I stated that I was apolitical. And they said, oh, my gosh, that's so refreshing because there's so much division. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, take the words right out of my mouth. Like, there is something within the human core. We truly are made for connection, so it's no surprise. But we are becoming so divided that people yearn for that connection. And if you show up in this emotionally open place, it's really incredible what people will meet you with in kind. But when we show up and we're like, these are my beliefs and I believe them so hard set, it creates that repelling. So in January of this year, after my significant other started his prison sentence, a friend came over to drop off some things, and we were sitting at my kitchen table. And I don't know how. Oh, I do know how. Friend is really smart, so I thought friend would know all of the things. And I felt really humiliated that I was about to ask these questions, but it was a safe person to do it with. And so I asked, do you know what the difference between democracy and a Republican is? And the answer was no. So I was a little bit surprised by that because I, of course, thought this individual would know because they're really smart, like I said. And so I just want to offer that question of pondering to the listeners in real time. Do you know the difference between democracy and a Republican government? And so then I asked, well, do you know if the United States is a republic or a democracy? And the answer was no. I was so relieved at the normalization of my ignorance, but then I was so alarmed as well. Because I wondered how many other citizens don't know these things. And I really wasn't great at government class or civics or even history in school. But I thought as a mature adult, it was probably my responsibility to have more insight than the I don't know that I was sitting in. So in short, I'll share what I discovered in looking this up for anyone else out there who maybe doesn't know. And maybe your definition is a little bit different, and I would love to hear what your definition is, if it is. But the information I looked up demonstrated that democracy is based upon what the majority of the people want. It becomes established as the fairest decision. So essentially, 51% would be the majority, and if you can get 51% to agree that that's what they want, then that becomes the law. Obviously, there are some steps to be taken to pass the law, so don't take that too literally, but it just takes 51% majority. So Thomas Jefferson actually referred to democracy as mob rule because it didn't matter on if it was beneficial to the majority or based on integrity. It just, if the majority of the people wanted it and it deeply wounded the other 49%, oh well, doesn't matter. The majority want it. On the other hand, a republic is based upon ruling by the laws established. So in the republic system, the changing of law is required to alter the rule naturally because everything is law-based or rule. And so I believe that is what our founding fathers created or wanted to create as the Pledge of Allegiance states to this republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible. Right? Indivisible, but we're being so divided by our own political system and beliefs. One really notable thing about a vulnerability within democracy is the ability to influence how people think. Now, if you guys haven't listened to some of our recent episodes and you want to hear this firsthand, we've taken a few call-ins recently and really walked people through their own breakthroughs and having their mindset shift in real time. It's a very real thing. Our brains are very programmable. They're very trainable. And I've talked about this in other episodes with simply watching TV and how in that brain state of being relaxed and semi-hypnotized, the unconscious mind drinks it in. So there's many, many tactics that can be employed to allow 51% to think that something is a great idea. And then majority gets the say. There is another aspect of democracy and, well, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party that I also want to chat about. And I don't know if you guys have ever thought about the energetics of the two parties. So you have the Democratic Party, and that could be said that the energy that is most expressed would be in alignment with feminine energy. Now, we all have feminine and masculine energy within us. And so I found this to be a very intriguing reflection to ponder. Feminine energy includes traits of feeling, of being, we-minded, focused on community. Feminine energy is open to receive. They prefer to receive. So when you look at the different stances or platforms that the Democratic Party runs on, you can see there's this embodiment of what feels good, being we-focused, of giving benefits of to people, so lots of receiving happening of those benefits. And on the other side is that masculine embodiment or expression of the Republican Party, where that masculine energy is more protective. So you'll see a lot more traditional values within the Republican Party focused on provision, doing. It's very linear, focused more on giving and much more individualistic. And so you can stop and examine that on your own, do your own critical thinking. But when I saw that presented, it really deeply resonated with me, especially because as we all have our own expression, as I said, we all have masculine and feminine energy. It is not a gender issue. Gender has nothing to do with masculine or feminine energy. And so the masculine and feminine energy is best when it's balanced for every being. Now, what balanced is for each human looks a little different. For one person, it might be 60% masculine and 40% feminine, or opposite. It does not mean that it's 50-50. So my point here is that no matter the entity, the person, the political party, whatever it is, having balanced masculine and feminine principles and energy is really the sweet spot. And so neither party is flawless. They both have their pros and cons, but it seems as though the more the division happens, the more the expression of those energies, the masculine and feminine energies, are polarized as well. They're not balanced in either one of the parties. So that gives you something to think about if you've never thought about this before from that angle. Now, in talking about the different parties, I just want to be clear that I don't believe that our political system, I don't love the word problem, but I'm going to use it anyway. I don't believe that it's a Democratic or a Republican party, for the record. I would instead, as I've been presenting throughout this entire series, say that maybe it's an integrity problem or a human nature problem. And as I mentioned earlier, perhaps it's influenced so largely by money and what comes with money, power, control, greed, wanting more and more money, using that to get what you want, influencing, capitalizing, leveraging situations so you can make more money, that could be the actual true underlying factor of what's most influential within our political system. And we all have the desire for abundance. That, too, is wired within our human essence. And, you know, I don't think I've mentioned this yet in this series, but I just want to say, if we're in a state of blame, if we're still looking for what we can blame for our problems, we're not actually evolving yet. That means there's some inner work to do for us to weed out our tendencies for greed or lack, scarcity mindset of getting and keeping. You know, there's so much in that, that what we see external of us is a reflection of what's internal of us. That's also in every system. And a lot of the people that are in office holding power, what we see in them is a reflection of the work we need to do on ourselves, but also our system, depending upon these people, really is capped at the place of evolution that these humans driving the ship are at, right? So before I get into my deepest truth about politics, I also want to talk a little bit about the communication we see in politics. Communication is such an important aspect of life. And have you ever noticed how politicians are? They read off of teleprompters. They're given questions from journalists before the press conference even begins. They prepare. They have people, even staffers that are writing, teams of people writing things that they're going to say to nail down their message, to write their speech for them. Is that because they're wanting to leverage those communications to influence the way we think? I don't have an answer to this, but it makes me curious why. And why do we accept it so much as normal? Have you ever stopped and thought about this aspect of communication? And have you ever noticed that if it's a corporation, a CEO of a company, now, if you ask them questions about their job, their career, their business, they can sit down and talk off the cuff quite easily about their vision, their goals, where they're headed. But when we get into the world of politics and politicians, it's different. Why? Why can't politicians so readily, if these are their values and what they campaign to get into office on, why would it be so hard for them to share their truth? To go back to the real truth of why I have chosen to be apolitical in this world, in this life to date, is because when I take a really objective view of the system, it seems as though voting is choosing who is going to control. It's choosing who is going to create the laws or the majority influence, however the system's working. And there are lots and lots and lots of laws that get passed every single year. So every year there's tweaks to the laws already established. They write new laws. There's even current talk about adding new agencies to the government. Like, there's more and more and more and more and more all the time. More control. Now, things look way different when you're walking up the mountain and you're at the base of the mountain. If any of you have gone on a hike, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You see a lot of rocks. You see the trunks of the trees. You see the path right in front of you. And the further up that mountain you get above the tree line, and you don't see trees anymore. You don't see just the narrow path winding between the trees. You have a broader view. You get to the top of the mountain, and you're looking down over everything. And everything looks different. Everything's smaller. You can see for miles. I know what I said is probably offensive to some people. Like, people are really invested in the political system. They're really invested in their vote. They're really invested in having that say. And that's what we've been taught to believe. My prompting and encouragement is to climb up the mountain, to get above and beyond the platforms, the issues at hand, what your belief is about all of the hot topics, whether it's public safety or immigration or abortion. There's so many topics that push people's buttons. And that's being at the base of the mountain. Because you have this primal part of your brain, the survival. And those topics and the way that they're presented keep us locked into that survival mode. And so it's harder to get, like I've talked about before, it triggers emotions. When our emotions are triggered, it's very challenging to think clearly. It's challenging to be objective. It's challenging to be very logical and rational. And so we have to be able to process the emotions to get above the survival mode that gets triggered by the stories were being told about the crisis that we're living in and bank failures and immigration and food shortages and, you know, all the things. We can live in fear. We can live with fear driving the bus or as a passenger. For some people, perhaps they're able to negate fear entirely. However, I don't think that's probably the commonality for the majority of the people. So there's a power and a strength in getting comfortable with fear and not basing your decisions out of fear. And if you took away all of the survival instincts, all of the survival responses, all of the surface level, and I know those surface, what I'm referring to as surface level platform issues are really, really important to a lot of people. They affect a lot of people. I'm not making light of it by calling them surface level, like it's not important. I'm just calling it surface level because it's a distraction to being able to get to the top of the mountain and elevate high enough to see that the system and your vote, because if you place your vote and the electoral college isn't actually aligning with the popular vote, does your vote matter? And it might, and I might not have enough information, so I welcome your feedback. You can break it down for me. Instead, I contend that this great separation of spirit, of church and state, right? Like, is church, to me, I'm referring to it synonymously. And we have to have this vast separation of church and state. But if you really look at our founding fathers and the principles that they built this country upon, there was not a direct separation of church and state. There's a lot of crossover in the principles of God's law and the Constitution and the way that the country was made. And we've gotten further and further and further apart from that. And I truly believe that if we're all living in alignment with God's law, universal law, whatever that is to you, there wouldn't be such a necessity to control the people or to have all of these laws or to even vote and elect public officials. Reflect back for me a recent time that you went to a place where there wasn't necessarily like laws in place or officials there. Maybe you're at a park, for an example. Was that a peaceful experience for you? While I worked in the system, and I surely responded to lots and lots of things over the years, I've seen the necessity for some structure. It's undeniable. But in most of the places that you go to where it's just people interacting, the majority of those interactions don't require the presence of a power asserting over us how to treat one another. So I'm going to talk briefly just a little bit about God's law and universal law. I'm not going to get into either one of them super, super deep. I feel like universal law, and then there's also hermetics. I mean, it's like masterclass after masterclass to really look at all of the different principles that we can choose to live by. But when we are living a moral, virtuous, kind, integrity-filled life, we're in alignment with the law of the land. So God's law, for instance, it directs us to not lie and don't steal. don't covet your neighbor or their belongings, adultery, respect one another, right? Like, basic end of the day, live in love. And by neighbor, I'm a literal listener, so I'm just going to throw out there that for a lot of years, especially when I was a kid going to church and learning the Ten Commandments and all of that, like, I really thought my neighbors were, like, the people down the street, right? Like, this was my interpretation. But neighbors, every other human around you, right? Can we just all embrace that definition that we mean all other humans around us? Now, God's law also directs that love does no harm to its neighbor. And it also encourages us not to put anything before God, which is really where I feel as though all of the magic happens, right? Because if we're all living in God's law, in these principles, putting that first above all else, the law of the land isn't as vital. So having that spiritual connection is so important to being able to live in alignment with God's law. And this whole series is talking about how and why the influences of these systems dull our spiritual connection. For some, disconnect the spiritual connection. And it is the vital foundation of our own personal empowerment. And of course, I think empowerment is one of the most amazing things in the world. So I'm an empowerment coach, but who wants to be controlled? Who really enjoys being told what to do all the time? Where to go, when to go there, what to eat. Now, there's only one universal law principle that I'm going to talk about, and that is the law of divine oneness. There's others that we could dive into here, but I feel like this one alone is so hefty that it's the nuts and bolts of this whole principle that I'm talking about. And the law of divine oneness asserts that what you do to others, you actually do to yourself. So some could say that concepts such as karma are born through this philosophy. Now, if you are stealing from yourself by stealing from someone else, why would you want to do that? I mean, if you think about every action that you take throughout the day, if that's something that you want to receive in kind or in return, how influential would that be to live a life that's in alignment of abundance, of kindness, of good, of prosperity, of expanse, of growth? Because we all are connected. It's one of those dynamics that is in the unseen. Just like I talked about my dog in the beginning, that connection you can feel with other people that are close to you, but you have that connection with people you're not close to. You have that connection with people you live on the other side of the world from. There's conscious thought. So everything you put out there, everything you do, the things you think, how it affects other people, it also affects you. And the more and more richness that I brought into my life, and by that I mean kindness to others and joy and peace and pleasure, the better and better life got. And the people around me that I attracted to me shifted. And I've gone from where I see the necessity for control asserted over people to creating a life where people are so kind and good and compassionate and loving that there is nothing beyond, hey, I felt uncomfortable when you did that. And that's all the more remedy. Remedy is a legal word. That's all the more remedy that is needed. So throughout my journey last year, as my motivation to vote, as my vote's going to change something, there's injustice happening, and who you elect matters. At the end of the day, I couldn't bring myself to give permission to someone else to have control. Now, I know some people out there listening are thinking, yeah, well, it doesn't matter if you voted for them or not. They're still in that office and they're still asserting control over you. And you're not wrong. But it's most aligned for me to not participate in that. And what would our systems look like if there wasn't participation? And again, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm not saying it's possible. It's going to happen. I'm not saying any of that. These are the things I like to critically think through. What would that look like? How would that change our world? So there's one more topic I want to touch on today as we discuss this concept of the political system and control and laws, the way the land is governed, the communication, the parties, the feminine, the masculine energy. We covered a lot of ground here. But it's this concept of a forced turning. And I've alluded to this in earlier episodes, and I'm finally getting to it. I feel like it's been a long time coming. So you've heard me talk about every 100 to 120 years, there's a cycle within that time frame. And there are four, as they're called, turnings within that 100 to 120 year time frame. So every, you know, 25 to 30 years, in essence, there's a cycle and different patterns happen within that turning. So it's said, based upon history, we're currently in a fourth turning. And a fourth turning has a lot of change, a lot of upheaval, which is why I went back to examine what was going on in this 1905 to 1915 timeframe. And I didn't do that with the political system because I feel like with this system, particularly where we are current day, is really influential of everyone. So I wanted to come at this one from a different angle. We didn't dive into the history. But when you dive into the history, you see the last fourth turning happened within this like 1905 to 1915 approximately timeframe. And so it's said that with these turnings, good times create weak humans. Weak humans create hard times. Hard times create strong humans. Now, we don't have a lot of people living who are 100 or 120 years old or what have you. So even if they are, they don't likely remember too much of what happened when they were just wee little kiddos. So it feels like everything is in chaos. But if you study history, you will be able to see and identify this pattern of going through these times of upheaval, of change, of massive shifting, pivoting, growth. And so if nothing more, I hope to inspire hope for those who are maybe grappling today with what is going to happen with the monetary system. Is the digital currency really positive for us, the law enforcement, and is it weaponized? How is that affecting the people, all of these people who are wrongfully incarcerated? It's too much. It's all out of control. You can trust in the divine rhythms. and take loving action. I'm excited to see what's on the other side of this fourth turning. I'm super excited. And I know that there's going to be a lot more shifting that's going to happen before we get there. So as we move to the top of the hour, I'm going to move into our shameless plug. And I have a really short story. Recently, I encountered someone and I realized that they were an author. I was connected with them on social media and I never saw anything about their book. And when I mentioned something about that, they said, yeah, I don't put it up on, you know, like social media platforms because I don't want to push it on people. And I thought, oh, yeah, wow, I can really relate to that. I'm totally the same way. But then I realized, like, I preferred for that to be shared. I wanted to know about the opportunity of the book. And then I had another light bulb moment where I'm like, oh, man, I'm doing the same thing to people when I don't share everything that there is to offer because I'm afraid I'm pushing it on people when all I really want to do is extend an opportunity. So there's a few things going on. I'm going to cover all of them fairly quickly to wrap up, but such good stuff. So tomorrow is our group coaching call. SJ and I, as you've heard in recent, those live sessions working in tandem with one another to help people move beyond the prison of the mind or their antiquated way of thinking that doesn't help them, which is a mind-body-spirit approach. And this month, we're working with time. So if you're one of those people who are saying there's never enough hours in the day, things never work out, I'm so behind, I wish I would have done this years ago, this is for you. This is for you. We are going to really empower you and allow some of that brain programming to shift so that you are empowered by time and time is serving you so that you are not running ragged like crazy. On Monday, we have an ancestral healing masterclass that SJ and I are also offering together and really looking at different aspects of how ancestral healing for the people who are showing up. We're going to dive into that specific group and allow those participants to release some of the heaviness that they're carrying from their ancestors. So for instance, if you think back to whatever happened in your heritage, you could track that back. Maybe we'll use the example of the potato famine. So if you're of Irish descent and your ancestors went through this extreme experience of starvation, that could set you up to have that scarcity mindset yourself, to feel like there's not enough. And science literally shows that this generational or ancestral energetic component and the responses of that trauma from our ancestors truly gets passed down to us. So we'll go over some of that science in the masterclass, and then we'll also give you some tools so that you can use them on your own to keep your life moving forward, to feel lighter and more amazing. Last opportunity, we are in the season of Mother's Day and Father's Day, and the most important person you will ever, ever, ever parent is yourself. And I have yet to work with someone whose parents use some parenting strategies that they're using within themselves that just does not work for them. And so they're playing that mother wound or father wound forward in the ways that they make decisions, in the ways they're raising their own children, in the way that they talk to themselves and get themselves through every experience of the day. We talk ourselves through that and work ourselves through that. And the creating authentic relationship one-on-one is one of my signature courses during this Mother's Day, Father's Day season. I have it with 50% off. So it's a great time to liberate yourself from these dynamics that do not work, including the dynamics of your parents' relationship within your own relationship. And trust me, you can't see it. People can never see it, but it's there. I didn't see it, but it was there. And so So it's just a really empowering one-on-one intensive experience where every relationship that you have will shift, because you're going to so powerfully shift the relationship with yourself that the things that used to trigger you with other people won't trigger you. You'll have stronger relationships, more harmonious connections with others. The things, if your parents are still living, that used to trigger you with them probably won't. And the most amazing thing that I love so much about this work is, more often than not, when people walk through this course, if they have a strained relationship with a family member, a mom, dad, or sibling, they'll receive a call shortly. Might be a couple of days, might be a week, might be a month at the most. But that connection, without them doing anything other than the inner work of it, will shift. So with that, I'm going to wrap up because we are pushing the top of the hour. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I look forward to you coming back next week to join SJ and I live for another session together with her and I. And until then, friends, ponder the political system and keep your eyes wide open.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.